had her on the show before. Constitutional attorney Catherine Henry is on the line with us. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
Wanted to have you on this morning because I watched your, I believe, 15-minute, 53-second video you did two nights ago. They're talking about these other efforts around the state of Michigan, things that are going on. And you were a little bit upset. You were kind of furious. You were venting. You were ranting. You were just letting it out because your effort, RestoreFreedomMI.com, which we talked about on this show, we've had you on, we talked about it, we asked people to help you volunteer for that. I even circulated a couple petition sheets for you. You guys fell a little short of what you were trying to accomplish to get it on the ballot for this November, but you're continuing your effort, and you're going to be putting it on the ballot in 2022. Talk about the effort right now, RestoreFreedomMI.com. Where is it at? What are you doing? Did I state correctly where you're at right now?
Yeah, absolutely. We're trying to get on the November 2020 ballot with this constitutional amendment, but we did fall a little bit short. Our initial goal was 550,000 signatures by Monday of this week, and between our excellent team of people that's been able to get our signatures to an error rate that is far more desirable than what the Board of State Canvassers is used to, between that fact and the fact that we do have petitions being circulated all across the state, we're now down to only 350,000 signatures that we need. And we have all the way through Thanksgiving Day, actually, to turn in these signatures to get us on the November 2022 ballot. So we are going full steam ahead. We're revamping our website to give some new additional information and some other resources for people to more quickly get involved with our effort. So, yeah, that's a pretty accurate description of where we're at.
Okay. Now, in the video, and I did also see somewhat of a response from Michonne Maddock. She's part of Michigan Conservative Coalition and Michigan Trump Republicans. There's other groups out there trying to do other things. And so I want to walk through slowly with you because you're up to speed on all these other petition drives and what's going on. Who's behind them, what you think maybe their motivation is. But, for example, Unlock Michigan. And one thing I noticed there, their language was approved, and Eric Doster, the attorney representing that group, is a former Republican Party legal counsel for the Michigan Republican Party. Eric and I have gone round and round at state conventions, face-to-face, almost came to punches one time. Him and I don't see things eye to eye. As soon as I saw him being their attorney, my eyebrows went up. And I'd like to get your thoughts on this Unlock Michigan petition drive.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of points that your listeners might want to know. One is just very quickly, they actually sent out an email recently that was geared towards the volunteers that we have with the Restore Freedom Initiative, basically telling our volunteers that our effort was over and then looking like it was coming from us, asking our volunteers to go ahead and get involved in their effort. So just for those of you who are listening that think that email came from us, it did not. Our petition is still definitely going. The other thing, though, mentioning is, you know, this Repeal 1945 Act, it's not that repealing it is going to be a bad thing. Mm-hmm. We definitely could get rid of it. But it's the fact that repealing it by itself literally is going to do nothing to stop the governor from what she's been doing. The far worse statute is actually the 1976 law, although that many people in our government has proclaimed that as a good thing and that it's, you know, it limits her powers. It actually gives her much broader powers in a wide variety of situations. So one example is 30.421, that's MCL 30.421. It's part of the Emergency Management Act. And it says that our governor can actually create or label, essentially, declare a heightened state of alert. And that would actually give her even more police powers over us and give her an even longer period of time, 60 days, actually, that she can then control us via this police power without any input from the legislature. So that's just one tiny example of how the Emergency Management Act is actually the bigger problem here. And if they're trying to come about any significant change and do it more quickly than what my constitutional amendment will be able to do, then they really need to be repealing both of them together. But telling people all over the state of Michigan that repealing this 1945 Act is going to stop the governor in her tracks is a blatant lie. And I would hate for people to put their, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into an effort like that to have it go through and then find out in the end the governor still gets to do what she wants to do anyway.
So, now, let me ask a question on that point. Speaker of the House Lee Chatfield, Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky have sued the governor in court, starting off, I believe, with the Court of Claims and then going to the Appeals Court. Arguments are going to be heard, I believe, the first week in August, ultimately probably going to go to the Supreme Court. But the basis under which they sued, from my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, was they were challenging her specifically over the 1976 law, which required their granting extensions every 28 days of her declarations of emergency, and that the courts upheld that she, even though wasn't operating with those extensions, she was operating under this 1945 Public Act. And so based on those court cases as how they're proceeding, this is how this Unlock Michigan calculated then, okay, well, if that's what she's hanging her hat on, the 1945 Public Act, let's go ahead and do a petition drive to repeal that, and then that would basically take her powers away. You don't agree with that logic or that legal explanation?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. First of all, it's interesting if you actually look at the brief that was filed by the governor in this case, the one that you're talking about.
Right.
They actually claim that the Emergency Management Act, the governor and her attorneys actually claim that the Emergency Management Act itself still gives her the power to do what she's doing, even though the legislature did not vote to extend the 28 days, you know, additional 28 days.
Right.
So their most recent brief talks about it in question number four of their statement of questions presented, but they feel that they are completely within, that they could just get rid of the Emergency Powers of Governor Act from 1945 and still allow her to exercise these powers. So the thing is, though, the legislature backs the 1945 repeal. It was actually Republican leadership that you mentioned that has been trying to plug this. And I've had several Republican legislators reach out to me very angry that I started the petition that I started, you know, over a month ago. Right away, they called me and were upset with me because they wanted me to be the one to do the 1945 repeal petition. And considered me as dividing efforts if I didn't do it that way instead of doing a constitutional amendment. So the problem is, I mean, even if we repeal both the 1945 and the 1976 law, that only stops the governor in that particular capacity. It certainly doesn't rein back in our legislature, which has also gone rogue. But
I want to stop you on that point, because your Restore Freedom MI.com website and your effort not only just addresses this current situation we're in, which I think is actually a constitutional crisis. We're operating right now with a dictator with no legislative representative government. We don't have state reps. We don't have state senators capable of basically fulfilling their constitutional oath of office, giving us a third branch of government right now. It's down to the executive branch and the judicial branch, and your efforts go further than just repealing the 1945 Public Act, the 1976 law. You've got other things in there that actually rein in the legislators as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. All levels of government with every single branch of government, because it's not just our governor that's the issue here. We have legislators, not just this session either. We've had legislators for decades that go in there thinking their job is just to figure out how to create more laws to control us.
Right.
So we have so many laws on the books that people, no one person could even begin to comprehend the number of laws truly on the books, let alone administrative regulations and, you know, all of those other pieces. So this constitutional amendment takes away all of that administrative regulation. Any kind of regulation against the people that's not put into place by the legislature goes away, but it also severely limits the legislature on controlling the people unless there's a supermajority that deem it appropriate, because a simple majority should not be able to go in and start, you know, encroaching upon our constitutional liberties. So, yeah, that's a big difference there.
Okay, Absolutely. Now one point of clarification. I just want to back the bus up a little bit. So what you're saying, what your legal opinion is that this Unlock Michigan effort, which I've been told through different sources, I haven't gotten confirmation yet, but when I see people like Amy Hawkins and I see other people, Eric Doster, I know Mike Shirky, the Senate Majority Leader, may be part of this effort, is at least supporting it. I don't know financially where their money's coming from. But the point is that you're of the legal opinion that even if they do get the signatures, it's not going to stop this governor from continuing doing to us what she's been doing.
Right. And so just to give you a clear real world example, I put this in my brief that I filed with the Michigan Court of Appeals, and I believe it's also in the brief I filed with the Michigan Supreme Court in the legislature's case against the governor. So if anyone wants to follow along, it's on my website, restorefreedommi.com. But okay. At any rate, if you look at on our legislature's website, we have the ability to see every single executive order that has been issued since 1993 going forward. So if you look at all of them from 1993 to through 2019, when, in fact, Governor Whitmer was already our governor, there were 605 executive orders issued. 25 of them were based on the governor's emergency powers. But if you look at each and every one of those 25, the sole statutory authority listed for the exercise of the emergency powers was the 1976 Emergency Management Act. Not a single one used the 1945 Emergency Powers of Governor Act as the source of authority. In fact, only one of the 25 even mentioned the 1945 Act, but did not refer to it as a source of authority. Merely just kind of referenced it in the preface above. Okay. So keep in mind, seven of those were issued by Governor Whitmer herself. She knows the Emergency Management Act is the one that gives her the source of power in the fine detail that she's trying to use it in. So, yeah, the fact that
that is, in fact, 1976 law, not the 1945 law.
That is correct. And I did pull all of those executive orders and I made them available. They were attached with my brief that I filed, but they're also available on the website. So if anybody wants to go and look at all of them pulled together, I have that right up there for people.
Okay. Now, I've got a couple of text messages coming in. Are you able to stay over through the break and do another segment with me?
Sure.
Okay. Because I got text messages coming in. So I just want to make sure I get everybody's comments in, number one, but I also want to be clear on these other efforts that are going on. Stand Up Michigan, we're going to talk about that when we get back from the break, because they started, folks, you remember we mentioned their Facebook page that got launched originally. It was Michiganders Against Excessive Quarantine. They got over, I think it was close to 400,000 members, like within 30 days. It was unbelievable. They got shut down by Facebook and they had to start a website, standupmichiganibelieve.com. We're going to talk to Catherine Henry about that. I'm Trucker Randy. We're going to take a news break. We'll be right back.
Per hour. Chance for scattered storms tonight, lows around 69, mainly cloudy skies. Chance for scattered storms tomorrow, high of 79. Temperatures above average Wednesday and Thursday with highs in the low 80s. Chance for scattered storms Thursday. From the Weatherology Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 75.
Everybody, welcome back into the show. This is the second half hour of hour number one of Your Defending Fathers with Trucker Randy on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. We're joined again this segment with Catherine Henry. She's the constitutional attorney who's been involved in RestoreFreedomMI.com, the petition drive to put it on our ballot to basically amend our state constitution that basically going to reel in Lansing, going to make some major changes if we can get this on the ballot and get it passed by the voters now November 2022. But one of the text messages came in before the break there, Catherine, and I've got a couple more since that during the break, that Stand Up Michigan has now been created as a result of their Facebook page getting shut down. I've been to their page, their website. They require, it looks like, a paid membership. They're selling, you know, very expensive T-shirts and hats to raise money, I guess, for this corporation, this company thing they've put together. But what's your overall perspective or opinion about this group and what they've evolved into?
So I was not really involved with the original group that had the like 360,000 people on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I actually got involved with them when I was speaking at the Rosa Parks Circle at a rally put on by the American Patriot Rally Committee. And Kevin Skinner from that original group saw me that night and asked me if I would come and speak at their rally that they were having in Nuevo later that week. Mm-hmm. So I did that. That's when I met Garrett, the other main original leader of that group.
Right.
And, you know, so I had been kind of just starting to get involved with them and getting to know them when I ended up writing this constitutional amendment petition. And so once it was announced informally, Kevin Skinner came on board 100% and has been, you know, backing that and putting all kinds of people and resources and whatnot into that effort, which, of course, is greatly appreciated. At that same time, I connected with the board members of the Stand Up Michigan group. And, you know, we did some extensive Zoom meetings and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they basically, you know, had the opinion that this would be great if it does, you know, work this way, but they wanted something more immediate, more, you know, right now. And so, you know, they chose to go with the 1945 route. But what's concerning to me is that it's not about a lasting change for them. It's not about doing something that's actually going to impact. It's about giving them something right now that they could say, oh, we've addressed this. We've, you know, checked off a box. And for me, especially in this particular climate, the way our government in all branches has been acting, mm-hmm. the fact that the legislature fully supports this repeal being done by the people in a petition process
right.
tells me this is not an effort of grassroots organization. This is not an effort of the people, by the people, for the people. Mm-hmm. This is just a roundabout way because the legislature is too lazy to get to work and roll up their sleeves and get, you know, address these things on their own. But,
right.
you know, so when they go around and, you know, send out an email purposely to all of the captain, you know, regional captains in our organization, trying to thank them for their service, reminding them that our petition drive is so-called over, and that, you know, asking them to go ahead and join in the 1945 repeal, all the while writing this as though it looks like it's coming from us. Those kind of tactics tell me that they're not very organized. They're certainly not ethical, and they don't even believe in their own ability to get the job done, because they have to go doing deceptive tactics like that just to be able to bring people on board for them. So That's okay. A huge difference, I guess.
Well, so point of clarification, based on what you just said, is, again, their effort would be more of a instant gratification. Look at what we did. We did something. We got enough signatures to give it to the Republican majority House and Senate. They could pass it by a simple majority vote. It doesn't require a governor's signature. So basically, we repealed the 1945 law. We did something that they think is going to shut this governor down right now. Where right. you're taking the long ball approach. Your effort is going to literally change Lansing if we are able to get it on the ballot, if we're able to get it to be passed by the voters of Michigan. We're successful. Your effort basically is going to change the way Lansing operates almost basically in all three branches of government.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And an important distinction, too, is that it's not that this 1945 repeal is going to fix something in the here and now, right now, and that it's just of a smaller nature. It literally is not going to change a single thing. The governor is able to exercise her, you know, emergency powers and references those emergency powers as, in fact, coming from the other acts, the 1976 Act. But just to give you an example, too, of how it doesn't even take the Emergency Management Act or the Emergency Powers of Governor Act for our state to be shut down for, you know, supposed health crises and things like that. Mm-hmm. If we look at the public health code, there's two examples I could point you to. So it's MCL 333.5207 and 333.2453. So in the 2453 section, it spells right out, and this is in the public health code, that a local health officer can issue emergency orders to prohibit, quote, to prohibit the gathering of people for any purpose. So that's just one example of how we've been stopped from, you know, seeing each other. We have to do all this social distancing garbage. And it's not just able to be, in fact, I don't think it's actually done, allowed to be done through the orders that she's using anyway. However, it is able to be done through the public health code right in the very text of the language. That other one, that 5207, of the MCL 333-5207, mm-hmm. Says that a circuit court can order a police officer to take an individual into custody as long as they have reasonable cause to believe that person might be a carrier of some sort of disease, just reasonable cause. Then they can observe them, examine them, do testing and diagnosis and treatment, and then have temporary detention to just hold them there. This law goes so far as to say that the court shall issue an order under this subsection. So they have to, as long as there is reasonable cause to believe that there's a likelihood this individual is a carrier of one of these things like COVID-19. In fact, it even allows people in the health department to go ahead and try to ask for these things on an ex parte basis, meaning there is no hearing. They just go to court and say, yeah, this guy coughed and he has a fever and he lost his sense of smell. So he clearly has COVID-19. We need to be able to basically arrest him and treat him. And so that's what that statute allows. What's even more concerning is that if they do this, if they go and get an ex parte order and go and arrest you, they can hold you by this very state law. They can hold you for at least 6 days without even having a hearing on it in the first place. Once they have the hearing, they can go ahead and extend the time further. But 6 days to be locked up and treated and poked and prodded without even having a hearing. That is ridiculous.
You're right.
Those are some of the very things that are still going to be left on the books when we take off that 1945 Act. I mean, the things that they think that they're trying to fix by taking the 1945 Act away mm-hmm. is literally going to do nothing. So as long as people know that and sure. they just want to have something they can feel good about and they want to circulate a petition, it doesn't matter what it's doing, that's fine. But I would just feel guilty if I wasn't out there trying to help people understand that if you're going to put your blood, sweat, and tears into this one, just know that it's not going to get the change that you think it's going to.
Right. Absolutely. Let me ask you this question then, too. I know you know Chad Bozzi, who got the language approved for recalling the governor. Did he go ahead, he was on my show, and he said he was going to go ahead and get the language approved to also recall the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, and the secretary of state, because that's the chain of command of succession. Once you remove Whitmer, you got to get rid of the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, and then the secretary of state. Do you know if he got those languages approved for those petitions?
My understanding is that he has not done that yet. I could be wrong. He and I have been touching base about different things. My understanding is he's still going to do that, but just hasn't gotten to that point yet.
Well, here's my point, because I've got a couple of listeners texting in, and they said, you know, they want to get involved in Chad's effort to do the recall. They want to go ahead and help with the effort for the 1945 thing. They've already helped you or will help you. Their attitude is, hey, if I'm going to be out collecting signatures, I don't give a crap if I have six clipboards with me. You know, right. Here's RestoreFreedomMI.com, here's Unlock Michigan, here's, you know, this one, that one, and oh, by the way, here's a recall of the governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, attorney general. You know, if you basically are ticked off with Lansing, sign all six of my petitions. That's the kind of attitude I'm getting from one, two, three, like six text messages right now.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, guys, so let me ask you this question. Because I told this to Chad on the show. I said, dude, do you know who the heck Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist is? He's a full-blown socialist, communist, progressive that's been backed by George Soros, just like Jocelyn Benson. I said, man, if we get rid of Whitmer, I surely don't want him anywhere near the governor's mansion. And I surely don't want Dana Nessel. And I really don't want Jocelyn Benson. Dude, you got to recall all four of them.
Yeah.
So don't get started on recalling Whitmer without recalling the other ones. Can you please convey that to him? Get him to understand that. And then once he starts the drives, let's do all four.
Yeah. And they can do that.
Am I wrong? Am I thinking?
The only thing I would say is you're leaving out the recall for Shirky and Chatfield, because state law takes over and says that the two of them would be next in line.
Well, first it would be Chatfield and then Shirky.
It's the Senate Majority Leader and then the House of then the Speaker of the House.
Oh, okay, because I thought I read the Constitution state, and I thought it was the Speaker first and then the Majority Leader.
Yeah, it's actually state law that talks about that. The only succession order in the state constitution under Article 5,
is
Section
the governor.
26. It goes governor, lieutenant governor, secretary
right.
of state, and then attorney general. And it stops
right.
there and it says, look at the laws to explain further. So.
All right, we got a short break. I got more text messages. Can you stay over one more time?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to finish this hour up with Catherine Henry. We'll be right back.
Did you know annuities are contracts, not investments, such as mutual funds? I illustrate to my clients what an annuity will do, not might do. It's all about guarantees. This is what is unique about annuities. They transfer the risk to the carrier to pay for the rest of your life. No other product on the planet can do that. Call Laura today at Bogdan Insurance, 231-264-6890. Again, 231-264-6890, serving Northern Michigan since 1998.
This is Mrs. Thompson, elementary school teacher at Northern Michigan Christian Academy. After I graduated from Michigan State University, I became a public school teacher where I met some amazing adults and young children. However, I felt limited in my ability to teach morality, respect, patriotism, and academics from a Christian worldview. I do believe that an education lacks validity without first acknowledging God as creator. That's why I thoroughly love my job as an educator at Northern Michigan Christian Academy. NMCA is a K-12 school located just off M68 between Lansing and Indian River. Our qualified teaching staff is dedicated to creating a safe learning environment for our students, approaching all academics, whether reading for our kindergarten students or advanced math for our high school students, from a biblical worldview. For more information regarding our school, please visit nmcaonline.org. Again, that's nmcaonline.org.
How do you like your burger? Do you like Swiss or cheddar, ketchup or mustard, double the bacon? No matter how you like to top your burger, everyone agrees that a really good burger should start with a really great bun. That's why the bakers of Village Hearth put so much care into making their natural buns. Baked with good stuff like toasted whole grains and natural honey, you're sure to find a variety that's just right for you. So no matter how you like your burger, Village Hearth has the perfect bun to build it on. Village Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
Hello, this is Dr. Kyle Denham from Breath of Life Chiropractic in Petoskey. We are fully operational for all services. This includes chiropractic, massage therapy, functional fitness classes, nutrition coaching, educational workshops, supplements, lab work, and more. If you've been sitting at home and thinking about how to get healthy, but you're not sure how to do this, we are the place for you. We help people get and stay healthy so they can live the life they want to live and not be afraid of a virus or chronic diseases like diabetes, dementia, and heart disease. We also help people with conditions like migraines and headaches, digestive problems, sleep issues, fatigue, shoulder, neck, and back pain, including sciatica, and weight loss through our 8 weeks to wellness program. Now is the time to get healthy. Don't wait. Call today to schedule your wellness score assessment. Our number is 231-622-8828 or at breathoflifechiropractic.net. Again, 231-622-8828 or breathoflifechiropractic.net. Give us 8 weeks and we'll change the rest of your life. Hope to see you soon. And God bless America.
Welcome back into the show. Final segment with Catherine Henry on the line with this. I got a text message from one of our listeners down in Lapeer. He says, I know who Garland Gilchrist is. I've heard you talk about him on the show, but I don't care. I want to send a message to this governor. What's your thoughts about that text?
Well, and again, that's where, you know, people that as long as they understand what they're getting into, like I said, whether it's the 1945 petition, whether it's a recall petition, as long as people know what they're getting into and they know the limitations and what problems it's not going to solve, then I'm all for people utilizing whatever method that they feel gives them a voice. So, you know, if we have people that think just sending, you know, it'll send a good enough message, at least for now, to have her, taken out of office to be recalled. Yep. And they know that they're not necessarily going to get any better with Gilchrist. That's mm-hmm. fine. I mean, I can get behind people doing that, as, you know, as long as they know what they're getting into.
Right.
Same thing with that 1945 Act. You know, if as long as the people truly understand, it's literally not going to solve any of these problems with mm-hmm. being told we can't gather or not, you know, all the stuff with coronavirus. As long as they know that that repeal is not going to do any of those things, but they just want to feel empowered to know that they've done something.
Right.
They've signed a petition or they've gathered signatures. Great. You know, I can totally support when people, are informed and do something like that.
Now, the one text message I got said, and this is actually pretty deep and a pretty good observation from one of my listeners up in the UP. He says, correct me if I'm wrong, but at least if we repeal the 1945 Public Act, would that then not force the governor, the legislator's lawsuit back into the courts and then basically force her to defend her actions in court on the 1976 law?
No, her actions are, I mean, it's in court right now. So it's not out of court. It's just they put it on the snail. The snail trail, right?
No, I understand. But because they basically didn't agree with Shirky and Chatfield's case regarding the 1976 law, which requires them to extend it every 28 days, she immediately, at her press conference, I heard it out of her own mouth, is that I still have the powers under the 1945 Riot Act. She didn't say it, but I know what it is. She came right out and said, Catherine, that was the basis now for her continuing these declarations of emergency. So what he's saying is take that away from her. Doesn't that force her to play back in the 1976 sandbox?
Well, that's what I was trying to mention earlier. If you guys, excuse me, if you go to the Supreme Court website, they actually have all of the documents docketed. So if anybody wants to go and look and see the governor's brief on appeal filed at the Court of Appeals case. It was the one that was filed on June 19th at 4:34 p.m. That literally, one of the four main points that they're raising is talking about the Emergency Management Act itself and how she still has authority under the EMA to do what she's doing.
Like, which one is that, 45 or 76?
The 1976 Act.
Okay, she's even in her brief, in her response, she's saying she still has the authority under 76. She's not relying on 45.
Right. The both arguments are being made. She's not saying it's only 1945. She's saying whether you go under 1976 or 1945, either way, I have the power to do this.
If
we get rid of that 1945, she's still going to go argue that she still has the ability to do this. And besides that, you know, she could turn around and try to claim that heightened state of alert, declare that under Section 4.21 of our Emergency Management Act, or like I said, utilize anything under these public health codes. She's going to do the same exact thing. She's just going to keep twisting things to try to suit her.
But my question, though, specifically, if she does go back to 76, doesn't that require the legislature to extend it every 28 days?
I absolutely agree that it requires that. But and like you said earlier, the whole thing is actually unconstitutional anyway for her to issue these executive orders against the people, controlling
That's
her liberties.
But, right. Got that.
But I would agree that assuming it was constitutional, the 28 day time limit definitely applies. However, that is not what they're arguing. What her argument in court has been is that 28 day time limit doesn't come into play, even if we're going under the 1976 Act. So everything she's been arguing, I disagree with. However, she doesn't seem to think that her powers end there. And because we have a legislature and courts that don't just stand up and go, you know what, people of the state of Michigan, just ignore what she's doing because it's unconstitutional and illegal on its face, so you don't have to follow it. If we had that, we'd have no big problem. But all of them are just telling us, well, you got to keep following her illegal executive orders while we sort this out in court. So
exactly. Okay, well, listen, I got a text message that kind of sums it up on your efforts and honestly mine. It says, this interview with Catherine is great. I wish more radio shows and press would dig into the questions like you are. And first of all, I want to say Catherine, at a great expense to her own family, her own business, her cash flow, her resources, is what she's done because she's passionate about this. She wants to make real changes for us here in the state of Michigan. But to be honest with you, Catherine, a lot of radio show hosts and newspaper people don't know enough about these laws to ask you the right questions to give you the opportunity to explain it to the folks.
Right.
I don't know of anybody else that knows enough about this to ask you about 1945 versus 1976 and what's going on in the court process and all that. I mean, I eat, breathe, and sleep this stuff like 12 hours a day to prepare for my show, and I hope you appreciate it, and I hope you appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, yes. That's why I love, any opportunity to get on your show, because I know that it's a great opportunity for any listener all across the world, as long as they have that link, that they can.
Yep. This is Cassie. Thank you for listening to Your Defending Fathers.
Yep. All right, hon. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you soon.